is a briefing on the earthquake readiness Burnside Bridge project. And Art Graves is the planner assigned to this case. Art, all yours.
So I'm waiting for the PowerPoint to pull up here. Hi, so Art Graves, BDS. So this is the second time that the Burnside Bridge Earthquake Readiness Project has come to the Design Commission. It's been before the Landmarks Commission a few times. It was here a little less than a year ago, October 18th, 2018. My presentation is really just going to be a very quick kind of reminder of the site, and then for the most part, the surrounding kind of historic resources, primarily the historic districts and landmarks. So that said, Burnside Bridge. So the proposal is, and I'll let the applicant kind of go into a little bit more detail about this. But the proposal is, in essence, to shore up the either to leave the existing bridge and make alterations to it so it's earthquake ready, or to remove the existing bridge and build a new bridge that, again, is seismically ready. So this is just showing quick zoning in that area. And I guess what I would say is, you know, it consistently has a D overlay on the east side and on the west side, showing historic districts, and then really zooming in on that. So the historic districts on the west side, Skidmore Old Town is the one in the closest one. And then on the east side, there's really not a historic district kind of that will be impacted by this. But there are a few landmarks along the way. And so the one option that will come up is a Coot Street couplet, and that kind of touches on if you follow Cooch on the east side, and rather than making that S-turn, if you followed Cooch straight, maybe straight west, kind of threads the needle between the Powers building and the yards. So that'll come up in the applicant's presentation. But again, every dot there is a listed landmark. So. And that's just turning off the noise a little bit so you can kind of get a better read on that. And really, that's it. So.
Excellent. Okay, we'll turn it over to, I guess you're here for a briefing. I'm not sure that we can call you an applicant, but the floor is yours.
Thanks very much.
Well, I'm going to jump in here first. I'm doing another piece of preamble, Teresa Boyle with PBOT. This project is Multnomah County's project, but similar to our other large regional transportation projects, the city has a very active role as partner, and that role is managed through through my group at PBOT. And so we provide project management services and coordination of all of the city's interests. And as you can see from Art's introduction, there are plenty of city bureaus and groups that have a lot of interaction with the project. So again, I'm just preamble. The project will be coming to you again as we go through the environmental impact phase of evaluation, and certainly when we get to the place of having a DEIS, a draft environmental impact statement, similar to Southwest Corridor that we did with you not too long ago, you'll have an opportunity to provide your feedback into that document. So this is just the second in a long relationship that we'll be having with you. This is very important thing. Thanks.
Thanks, Teresa. Everybody can hear me okay? And thank you, commissioners. As Art said, we were here about a year ago during an earlier phase of this project. We call that the feasibility study phase. And at that time, we had over 100 options on the table. We're down to our final four. And by the end of this year, we want to be down to the final three. So we want to tell you which one we want to drop. That's one of the reasons we're here today. And that's kind of a minor decision point coming up this fall. Next summer around this time is when we'll be going down to the final one, and we'll definitely want to talk to you before that decision also. So thank you for your time today. The first slide's kind of about the need for the project. This graph at the bottom shows the last 10,000 years of geologic history in this region, and every blue line there is a 9.0 earthquake, and every orange line is an 8.0 earthquake. And as you can see, it's been about 319 years since our last one. And we don't know when it'll happen. It could happen today, it could happen 200 years from now. But if it did happen today, we're told by the engineers in the region that none of the bridges downtown would be usable for about 2 weeks. And the Tillicum Crossing, which is our newest downtown area bridge, the bridge is expected to do fine, but the approaches are expected to settle due to liquefaction. So that 2 weeks would kind of account for bringing in a lot of gravel to at least get buses or emergency vehicles over that bridge. So so the need for the project is really about this earthquake risk and the fact that the Burnside is about 93 years old anyway. So the next slide is sort of why Burnside. I work for the county. Pardon me if I didn't introduce myself, Mike Pullen with the County Communications Office. And the region has a series of lifeline routes that we're supposed to be able to count on after a big earthquake. This map shows those routes. As you can imagine, it includes the freeways and some of our big arterials and the streets like Powell that used to be a state highway or still are. And Burnside Street is one of those. And it was chosen partly because it goes all the way from Gresham over the through downtown and then over the West Hills into Washington County. And we show that route in yellow on this slide. You'll notice there's a lot of red dots on these emergency routes, and each red dot represents a seismically vulnerable structure, like the city streets that cross I-84 that aren't expected to do that well in an earthquake. So we've shared this slide with regional emergency planners, and the region is actually currently studying how to address these problems on the emergency routes. But at the county, the only route we have that crosses one of our bridges is Burnside. So our county board about 4 years ago, they were looking at the next 20 years and said, let's do our part because the state is really focusing on 205, ODOT is. And they look at this problem from a state lens and see 205 being a much newer freeway than I-5, leading to a much newer bridge to Washington State. And so they're investing in 205 and that Abernathy Bridge down in West Lynn, Oregon City. So that means I-5's not going to get fixed very, very soon. So we're coming forward as a county and trying to get at least Burnside ready for that disaster when it happens. So there's kind of three main purposes of this project. The first, as I mentioned, is the day that this earthquake happens, this big one, we want the Burnside Bridge to be reliable, you know, as soon as the shaking stops. And that's a very high seismic standard with no liquefaction on the approaches also. The second point is if it's the only bridge across the river downtown, we know it'll play a big role in the economic recovery that'll happen after that earthquake. We don't want to be like New Orleans was after Katrina, where a third of the population and a third of the jobs, you know, disappear in a few months and then don't come back very quickly. And then the third point up there is really, you know, if we're lucky and the earthquake doesn't happen for 100 years, well, the Burnside Bridge is still over 90 years old today. The bicycling community especially tells us they would like it to be safer. We'd like it to be lower maintenance. We just are wrapping up a project where we try to keep the concrete from falling on people in Saturday Market and remove all the nets that were under the bridge. So we need a long-term solution. It's not our oldest bridge, but it's one of our oldest. And it's one of our busiest bridges. So this slide kind of covers the long-term of this very long project. As Teresa mentioned, this will be a long relationship we have with you guys too. The feasibility study that was mentioned was completed last year. That's where we went from over 100 options down to 4. We're now in this green stripe here, which is going to lead to selection of what we're going to build and where. The preferred alternative will be recommended around this time next year by the region, and then it takes about a year and a half to get the federal approval and publish our final environmental impact statement. Pardon me. We're lucky that we have funding through this whole planning phase, the environmental review phase, and we're working to secure funding by the end of this year to get us through the design phase. So it's all local money so far, no state or federal money. Construction would be about 5 years away. On the money topic, we've got a slide here that kind of talks about where the money is coming from. Currently, it's all being paid for by the local vehicle registration fee you pay if you live in Multnomah County. And that we think will get us through the design phase. We're trying to get on the Metro's planned ballot measure, bond measure for November of 2020. That's not guaranteed we'll be on there, but it's not guaranteed the voters will pass it, but that's our hope. And then as oftentimes happens with these large projects, if the locals can fund it through planning and design, we're hoping that the state and federal governments will help us with the construction money, along with local money that will be needed for that. And because this is a very expensive project, the county is going to be considering in November raising the vehicle registration fee. It's currently about $19. It currently is $19 a year per vehicle, and it's the lowest in the three counties now in the region, but we're proposing to raise it to $56 a year, and that would go into effect in 2021. And you'd still just pay DMV as you pay now. You don't have to pay the county directly. And that money would be dedicated to this project and could only be used for our bridges in the future. So this is a slide just about sort of our decision-making process. And Art didn't mention that he's one of our prize volunteers. He is representing the county's bicycle and pedestrian community advisory committee on our task force. And we appreciate his time. There's about 22 other folks who are on that task force representing the neighborhoods and the different modal groups. And they have met, I think, 9 times in the last 10 months or so. So they're doing a lot of the detailed work, looking at all the criteria issues and giving us input. We have a policy group that includes, the head of PBOT is on it representing the city, as well as the general manager of TriMet and different elected and appointed leaders from the region. And then ultimately the preferred alternative is voted on by the Multnomah County Board of Commissioners, Portland City Council, and Metro's Council, and I think JPACT also. And then it has to be approved by the Federal Highway Administration. So they have the ultimate authority. With the light rail project, it's probably Federal Transit Administration, but with a bridge project, it's Federal Highway Administration. So we have a lot of other work groups, and it's a very elaborate number of people helping us out with different topics. And this slide kind of gets to that point too. This is kind of our NASCAR slide, all the governments that are involved. And we have some regional partners. The city of Gresham has a city councilor on our policy group, as well as city of Beaverton. And folks from Clackamas County and Washington County have, they're also interested in this project. So it kind of gets to the regional need. You know, we think of it as a city bridge, but so many of us work on one side of the Willamette River and live on the other, or have children that go to school on the other side of the river. So it kind of gets to that that importance. And at this point, I think I'm going to transition to Heather Catron with HDR Engineering, and Heather's our project manager.
Good afternoon. I'm just going to take a moment to talk a little bit about what we have been studying, what some of our early findings are, and our process moving forward. So as Mike mentioned, when we left the feasibility stage, we had 4 recommended alternatives to study further. We've been working on that since January, and those 4 alternatives are shown up here. The first one is the enhanced seismic retrofit, where we are looking at retrofitting the bridge as well as replacing some parts of the bridge that can't be seismically retrofitted. We're also looked at a fixed bridge alternative. So this would be a non-movable bridge. I will kind of get to the point on this one that this is the one we are recommending does not move forward. That decision will be formally made by our policy group in October. We do have some public involvement that is occurring right now to get input on that as well. And then the last two alternatives are both movable bridge alternatives. The third one is a replacement, basically replacing what is out there in kind, except for it would expand the width of the bridge, which would allow for better bike and pedestrian facilities. And then we're also looking at kind of a movable bridge replacement that has a different connection into Coote Street as well to kind of minimize that S-curve. So the next slide just showed these in a little bit more detail. This slide is showing what would actually be retrofitted or repaired as part of that seismic retrofit. Thank you. Yeah. And then this is just showing the elements that would be replaced as part of the seismic retrofit. And the next slide. So the high fixed bridge, when we were in the feasibility study, we were looking at kind of two options for a fixed bridge, one at a clearance of 97 feet, and then others that were at a clearance of around 120 feet. As we entered into the environmental phase, it was the 97-foot clearance bridges for a fixed bridge that were recommended to move forward. And we conducted a navigational study, which is kind of required by the Coast Guard for us to determine what sizes of vessels we need to accommodate throughout the project. And what we found is that we really needed to have about 147 feet of clearance to accommodate the types of ships that have come up the river. Those include what you see in the picture here is the World Cruise Ship. And then also, I'm sure many of you are familiar when there's the Rose Festival of the military, the Navy ships that are there. And even though they kind of park where they don't go under the bridge, when it's time for them to leave, they do go under the bridge to turn around and to leave. So really what that means is that the bridge got so high, it had to get so long, and the impacts kind of get so wide because we're getting so far out into the city street network that we really are recommending that this alternative does not move forward. We are getting some early public feedback that I believe over 80% of respondents to date have either strongly agreed or agreed that this should be dismissed. I think you can see why. So this is just another graphic that shows the existing bridge today versus what would be the high fixed bridge in its 147 configuration. So then the next two I want to touch on is the movable bridge, the replacement. Again, this is really kind of, think of it as in-kind. We haven't determined the type yet that will happen during design, so whether if it's a lift or a bascule bridge. Really kind of the biggest difference here is that the current bridge is kind of bell-shaped, so it's wide on the ends where it connects into the street networks, and then it kind of gets skinny in the middle. We just kind of take advantage of that full width, and as you'll see in some upcoming slides, we really kind of dedicate a lot of that to bike and pedestrians and having a physical barrier for them on this replacement option. And then on the next slide, so the Northeast Coosh connection, as many of you I'm sure are familiar, if you've driven on Burnside and heading into the city, there's currently that S-curve that you go through. So this was looking at straightening that out. One of the reasons this really came up is we know that during recovery and immediately following an earthquake, there are large vehicles that we would have to accommodate on the bridge. And so that was one of the reasons we were looking at kind of straightening out that curvature. So that's this option that's being studied. I should mention that all of the alternatives are being designed to be streetcar ready because there is a plan in Portland Streetcar's plan, an option that sometime in the future maybe a streetcar might go over Burnside. And that just kind of shows where that Cooch connection would go through right now where those new buildings are. We can actually kind of squeeze in there, but obviously there would be some impacts to those residences and people who are in those buildings now. So we'll be looking at those as part in our EIS. So these are the two different cross sections, as I mentioned. On the retrofit, you can see the one on top where we have a smaller kind of footprint to work with. So you'll see kind of the 8-foot sidewalks, some smaller lanes. And then for the replacement alternative, that's where we get to take full advantage of that width and have some larger bike ped facilities. You can see the separated physical barrier there for that. And then the other thing I should mention is that to be consistent with the ETC project, we are anticipating that there is a transit-only eastbound lane, which is shown with the bus there. So that's the cross sections that we'll be studying in the environmental impact statement as well. The other thing that is really one of the big considerations for our project is what do we do with traffic during construction? If you remember kind of back to that timeline slide, right now we're looking at construction being anywhere from maybe 5 to 8 years, kind of depending on the option and depending on if we have a temporary detour bridge or not. So there's really two options that we're going to be studying along with each of these alternatives as far as traffic management. That first one is basically showing that there is a temporary bridge that does allow for some traffic to be maintained during construction. And then option two is that we fully close and allow traffic to detour to other sites. So part of the analysis that we'll be doing during the environmental impact statement is to be looking at where does traffic go, kind of what is the impacts relating to that, and also thinking about other projects that may be occurring at the same time, like the Rose Corridor project, depending on how that timing overlaps. So the next slide just kind of gives you some examples of what those temporary detour bridges look like. Because the existing bridge is a movable bridge, the temporary bridge would have to be movable. So there's companies who basically manufacture these bridges that we would bring on site and construct so that we could maintain that river traffic. Some things to mention, it's about $100 million to have a temporary detour bridge, an additional cost. And we also think it's probably about an additional year of construction. And just part of that is duration and being able to put that temporary detour bridge in place. And then I want to touch a little bit on, as Mike mentioned, one of the things we'll be working on in this winter and going into next summer is recommending a preferred alternative to have in the draft EIS. So we are working with our community task force and others to develop evaluation criteria and measures to help us get to that preferred alternative. So this is the list of the evaluation criteria topics that we are considering. Again, the public is also being asked this month to provide us feedback on these. And when we go to the policy group in October, we'll be asking for their approval on the alternatives moving forward into the EIS, as well as the criteria that we're going to use to help us when we're looking at the preferred alternative itself. There is an online open house that is occurring right now. I think, Mike, right, is it about 360, 340 people?
Filled out the
survey. Yeah, so we have an online survey where we're asking for input on the alternatives, how people feel about our recommendation to drop the fixed bridge, asking them about the traffic, the options about managing traffic, and then also about these criteria. We have a lot of briefings that we've been doing with different community groups and organizations as well this summer. Those are continuing through September. We are doing multilingual outreach through our community engagement liaison. We also have a lot of social media and e-newsletters and all the tools that you use today when working on these large projects. We have tabling that's been occurring as well. Of course, we did it right on the rainy weekends, so we may not have been quite as successful as we were hoping, but I'll give it to our staff for hanging out there in the rainstorms. And then again, the online open house that I mentioned and the survey that we're asking people to fill out. I should mention that the open house and the survey are also have been translated into 4 languages and then 5 if you include the English language as well. And I think, is that our last slide is just talking about what are some of our key engagement milestones. So again, the first one is kind of where we're at now, looking for input on these refined alternatives and the draft evaluation criteria. In the summer, again, we're going to be looking for input on that preferred alternative. And then in the winter, we'll be publishing that draft environmental impact statement, where we'll have formal hearings and go through a process. And then ultimately, from that, in the final EIS, we'll have a preferred alternative, we'll have some mitigation and a record of decision. So that is the timeline we're on to get to design. And I think, Mike, did you want to add something?
You might want to tell them about the timeline for the bridge type selection, because I'm sure they'll be great.
Oh, yeah, thank you. So when we complete the environmental review phase, once we know what we're going to build, that's when we will enter into type selection. And so we'll probably have about a year process to work through. Since right now all of the options are movable bridges, assuming that if it is a replacement, then we would be deciding what type, as far as like bascule versus lift. If it was the retrofit, then obviously it's what's there today. Yeah, and I think at this time we'd like to take any questions that you may have.
Thank you very much. Art, do you have anything else to wrap up before we go to questions?
No, I can.
Okay.
Swing back around later.
Okay, thanks very much. Commissioners, do you have questions?
Go ahead.
No, go ahead.
Well, I'm just looking at your illustration of how this thing's going to collapse. And does that imply that the buttress system that's there is going to survive and spans all collapse? Or does the whole bridge completely go?
Oh, so I think in the fact sheet we have a picture. So great question. I should mention that during the feasibility phase we did do a simulation that showed what would happen to the existing bridge during an earthquake. And so this is just a snapshot from that video simulation. But at this point we believe basically the whole structure itself would ultimately collapse into the water and over the freeways and the railway system.
We could send that link.
Spans.
We could send the link, yeah.
Just the spans and
no, the whole bridge. The entire, as Mike mentioned, the bridge is almost 100 years old. So in a magnitude 9.0 earthquake, we would expect that this bridge would actually, the entire bridge would collapse.
Which makes it difficult then to totally retrofit.
Yes, so the retrofit, as we are finding, is becoming more, there's a lot of it that would actually require replacement. And part of that is just because, again, since it is such an old structure, there's pieces of it that, yes, we can retrofit, but there's also a lot of it that we're kind of finding that we're going to have to replace, not only to withstand the seismic event, but also for kind of the superstructure, like the roadway. We also, because we expect these very heavy vehicles to transverse over the bridge, a lot of that we're looking at now having to replace as well to be able to basically support those types of vehicles. So the more we kind of get into design, the more we're finding out about that, yes.
It's still the lowest cost of the alternatives, but
it's not low by very much anymore.
Hmm. Okay. Costs keep going up on that alternative?
Yes.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So what are you doing on the bridge right now?
That's kind of our Band-Aid project. That's a great question. Anybody who's lived here has noticed for 3 years there's been guys with orange vests working on the bridge. And that project was green-lighted way before this project that we're talking about today with you ever got started. So we actually scaled it back. And before the project, there were nets to keep all the little bits of concrete from falling on the shoppers at Saturday Market and on the people who work at the ambulance company on the east side. Mm-hmm. So all those little bits of concrete have been removed and it's been sealed up. And so, you know, our timeline we've showed you is our best hope, but who knows, it could be even longer before we have all the money to do this project. So it's basically to make the bridge service the next few years until this big fix. None of the work that's been done in the last 3 years makes it perform better in an earthquake.
And then I read, I think a couple of days ago, that the skateboard is going to get a historic designation. Can you describe what impact, or if any, it would have on
that one? Yeah, that's a fascinating one. I'll tell you a little bit, and then maybe Jeff, our expert on, Jeff Howman is with Parametrics, and he's our sort of historic resources expert on the team. So the Burnside Skate Park is this iconic do-it-yourself skate park that was built without permits on City of Portland property. And I think it was Mayor Bud Clark who gave them a memo that said, you know, we're happy that you're here on our property. That was a long time ago. And they're iconic. We've been able to repair the bridge around the skate park, but we know that all of the alternatives that Heather described to you, all of those would pretty much change what's there permanently. So because it's so iconic, it may have status as a historic place. Jeff, do you want to come up and update them?
And while Jeff is doing that, I'll mention that community task force that we've been mentioning. The skate park sits on the community task force, so we are working very closely with them.
So, yeah, what Mike said is correct. There's no designation, no official designation yet, but we had a historic preservation sub-consultant take a look at all potential resources that aren't currently designated that might be eligible for listing in the National Register. And the skate park was one of those that they identified. Even though it's not 50 years old, there's a criterion within the Historic Preservation Act that says resources of a certain significance can be determined eligible for the National Register, even if they aren't yet 50 years old. The Portland building is one of those that received that status as well. So until the State Historic Preservation Office and others, the federal agencies look at it, we won't know for sure if it's eligible, but the historic preservation specialists think it probably is.
And is this being initiated by skateboarders, by the county, or by the State Historic Preservation?
It's being initiated by the county as part of our process of complying with the Federal National Environmental Policy Act and other federal laws.
So as a consequence, regardless of the options, it will have impact on it, which means then you have to mitigate that, correct?
Correct. Yeah, it's the skate park is built around some of the piers, and it's built over an area of soil that's really very unstable. So it's going to have a lot of seismic mitigation there, and those piers come out and get replaced. There's no way to preserve the skate park as it is. So there would be some other form of mitigation, perhaps replacement somewhere else. We don't know yet. We've just really started conversations with the skate park board about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What is the timeline difference between the seismic retrofit and replacement? Is there a significant difference?
So, I'll caveat this a little bit just with the fact that we're very early in the process. And so as we further our design, we'll definitely be able to answer that in more definity. But right now we're looking at potentially about a year difference between a seismic retrofit and a full replacement. I would say right now, I mean, we're kind of in the 6 to 9 months ish. And again, as we kind of further refine the alternatives and look at those kind of constructability issues, we'll know. But at this point, that's what we think.
And which one takes longer?
The replacement options. Yeah. So replacement options are close to maybe a year longer than the retrofit. But the more we're learning about the retrofit, and the more we're learning about what needs to be replaced, the more that those kind of change.
And I could not let things go by on behalf of transportation without acknowledging, as the slide did, that the choice to provide a temporary bridge during the replacement, should that be the alternative chosen, adds another year and cost to the project. So the traffic evaluation that we're undergoing right now and the environmental impact study will be the thing really that helps us understand on a very granular level what it would mean to close the Burnside. In the absence of any other work happening, if there was nothing else happening in Portland, we would perhaps be coming up with a very different answer. Yeah. But given potential for I-5 Rose Corridor, possibly Southwest Corridor, we may need it. So that decision will be wrapped into all of this environmental process.
Thank you. Yeah.
Do all the alternates require the bypass bridge? All three considered?
So we will be using the traffic analysis to figure out if we need to have something. What it would mean if we were doing a seismic retrofit, gosh, I'm going to have to write that down because that is such a good question. I've been so focused on the likelihood of a full replacement that I hadn't gotten that far. But the traffic evaluation will be useful to help us in all of those cases.
So I'm not sure if this is a question for Heather or Mike.
Sure.
The approach from the east side is in the D overlay, and it is design review territory. It is design commission territory. The bridge itself is an historic resource, and the west side lands in Skidmore Old Town. So the bridge and the approach from Skidmore Old Town, that is within the jurisdiction of Landmarks, Landmarks Commission.
Yes.
You're currently working on the draft environmental impact statement, and presumably that includes a scrub through design guidelines, both and looking at every option, the impact that every option has for responsiveness to guidelines, both historic within Skidmore, Old Town on the west, and then the D overlay on the east. Is that information that is available or that will be available and that you will daylight with us? You know, will you bring us at some point when you're here? Because, I know we're involved in like a long-term conversation here. At some point, will you be coming in with an evaluation of the alternatives and giving us a really good sense about your evaluation of how the alternatives will respond to guidelines?
Yes. So we are... from a process perspective, in October, when we go to the policy group and we get their final approval for the options moving forward, which at this point, I think it's safe to say the fixed bridge won't be one of those,
okay,
and the criteria, in November, we will officially start our environmental impact statement. We'll issue our notice of intent. And then as the year progresses, that's when we'll be doing all of that analysis, where we'll be taking the alternatives and compare and looking at them as they impact different resources, including historic or, you know, whatever the different resource may be. And then it would be, and Jeff, I'm going to look to you, I think it would be in the next early summer where we would be able to come back and talk about the how the impacts relate to each of the alternatives.
Yeah, or even sooner, spring, before we start the preferred.
So in the spring would when we'd be able to come back and to show you that kind of comparative analysis between the alternatives and how they compare to those different impacts to resources.
Okay. I'm very much looking forward to it. It's going to be, I think, a very interesting conversation because the work that we do is pretty fine-grained, right? I mean, we are site-specific, and we are looking at a lot of detailed information around placemaking. So you know, it's contextual response, public realm response, and quality and permanence. Mm-hmm. And you know, you can say it's a bridge, so it doesn't have the impact. But in fact, it touches so much land on both sides that it has immense impact. What does it do to the existing structures? What does it do to the urban fabric, to the green space? How do peds and bikes move? I mean, just all this stuff is all really relevant to guidelines.
Absolutely. And I should mention, so as part of the work that we're doing, we have different working groups and focus groups that we work with. One of them is actually an urban design guidelines group that we're working with to talk about some of those things, because you're absolutely right. The way that the ultimate project kind of interacts with the whole, you know, urban fabric and the parks and bikes and peds and all those things is very important.
I saw Patty Tillett in one of the photographs. Is he on that group?
Yeah. He is, yes. Randy Gregg,
very
Patty
good.
Tillett. Yeah, so a lot of the people that you may expect who would have an interest and expertise in helping us on this project, we are engaging with.
Yeah. So we believe we set really a great precedent with the Tillicum Overcrossing and the Design Commission, and our TriMet's interaction with the commission over the years to get those framing characteristics in place and have those opportunities for check-ins and feedback throughout. I love the idea of being able to come in early with simply the conversations about guidelines and big picture, how do things fit? And then long relationship, we get to continue to talk about all those things and find those points, because your role as a commission, I am strongly convinced, is one of those things that's made the Tillicum what it is.
Great. Any other questions or comments?
I have a couple of questions. Is there a front runner in these options that you think is probably the one that, you know, you're going to recommend going forward? And the other part of that is bascule and lift. What are the differences, I guess, for the way that we're using the bridge? Is there a reason to go with one or the other?
So to answer your first question, really no. There's a clear option that we're saying shouldn't move forward, which is the fixed bridge. But among the three, I think, you know, that's really the environmental review process that we're going through is really going to help us get to the recommendation of which one for a preferred alternative. There's certainly pluses and minuses associated with each one that we'll be talking about, and I'm sure different people have different opinions about that. But we really won't know that answer until we get till the summer and have one that we want to recommend. I'm sorry, go ahead. Yes.
Just to interject real quick before you answer the second part, did you really have 100 other options before you got down to these three? Like, what other options could there be?
So
like
we
helicopters?
Looked, we looked at a lot. We looked at, people asked us about things like ferries, tunnels, double-decker. We even looked at a... why can't I think of the, what's that?
A tram.
Thank you.
Twin bridges.
We kind of looked at north alignments and south alignments and existing alignments. So there were a lot of other different alternatives that we did look through. Did that answer that question? Okay. So then as far as the lift bridge versus the bascule bridge, again, once we determine the preferred alternative during type selection is when we'll really determine that. There are some things that the engineers would probably tell you at this point, you know, where one may be a little easier to design for seismic resiliency other, you know, than another, although you can get them both there. So ultimately, that will really happen during type selection after we know what the alternative is that we're building.
Okay, of course.
So with a lift bridge, which would be like the Hawthorne or the Steel, one disadvantage is that there is a height limit versus a bascule. There's an infinite height limit. But then in effect, the Steel bridge, which is a lift bridge, and the Hawthorne, which is a lift bridge, they sort of box it in. So it's not that much of an advantage. And I think the engineers would say that the lift bridges are, because everything is connected as it goes up and down, it's a little more easier to design it for the big earthquake than the basket. But the chances that the leaves are going to be up, they have to plan for that, but it's pretty rare. That bridge currently opens maybe like three times a month for like, you know, 10 minutes each. So.
Cool. Thank you.
Welcome. Other thoughts?
Well, just simple, more of an informational thing. Does anybody still work in those little bridge tender shelters on the side of the bridge? There's actually people in there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Even though it only opens three times a month?
They are in there when it opens. That doesn't mean they're there all the time.
Okay.
Yeah. So we have, we like to have two people working at all hours at night, partly for their safety. So it's typically the Hawthorne, and I think it's the Morrison is the other one. And then when a vessel comes through, there's a call system and they call somebody out. But it's, technically, there is a way to open them if nobody's there, but it's a lot safer to have somebody there and make sure that all the people are out of the way when the gates come down and the leaves go up. Yeah.
So a couple of things related to what's underneath the bridge, on both sides. On the east side, there's the city's iconic park. We all know there are social issues, there are functional issues. So hopefully, as part of your design of these bridges, you will engage Portland Parks or the communities that are really concerned about those to resolve and solve as much as you can some of those issues on the west side. Go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to respond. So we anticipated what you're talking about. So the director of Saturday Market and staff from three of the big social service agencies,
yes,
on the west side,
yes,
Central City Concern, the right, Rescue Mission, and Mercy Corps, they're all on the same committee that ART serves on, our community task force. And Portland Parks, through the efforts of PBOT, they're bringing the concerns of Portland Parks forward. There's an interesting sort of dynamic between improving connections between the bridge and the park, and then also the use of the park and the way the events use the park, that is sort of an interesting thing that we're kind of working through. Another thing is there's the Japanese Memorial,
right,
in Waterfront Park,
right,
just north,
right,
of the bridge.
Right.
And we've met with their director, and we're aware of how significant, that's the Robert Marasse designed memorial. And it's a very, you know, important part of Portland's history that we,
right,
we're knowing we're having to work very near that facility too.
But one thing I think I really encourage you is that to make sure that your bridge, piers, or whatever are located and designed in such a way that doesn't foreclose the opportunities for a lot of programming under the bridge, a lot of activities under the bridge, because what really causes some of the social issues is that because of the piers, and there isn't a good way of programming that space. And we all know in places where they are covered or a little bit dark, things happen. So that's one thing that I'm sure there would be other people, but that's something that we will be looking for when you come back here. As Julie said, some of these fine grain issues, that's a major public open space, and how this, your bridgehead contributes to placemaking in there would be very, very important to us. And then the other one is on the other side is a little bit far-fetched, but I think you have to bear that in mind, and which is this bridge right now currently is 90 years old. The new bridge would be maybe 100 years, you know, and earthquake may not happen in the next 100 years. It may happen in the next 10, 15, 20 years. So we don't know that. And as a result of this major earthquake, the freeways, as you mentioned, with all of your red dots, could be gone. And then that creates an opportunity for the freeway not being there. I would like you guys to be really forward thinking and think about, okay, if the freeway is not there, this bridgehead underneath should be designed in such a way that creates a fantastic opportunities for people.
I think that's the most forward thinking comment we've ever had.
I think you need to think about that. Hopefully with new technologies, this bridge would be useful for another 200 years. So I would encourage you to do that. But even in the absence of that, right now there is an elevator right there, and the connection of the trail, East Bank Esplanade, right there is very confined. It's not good. So, yeah, whatever you can do to really improve that connection, make mm-hmm. it seamless, would be a great benefit to the public.
Thank you. One thing I'll say is that the existing bridge built 93 years ago, back then they built these spans, especially the ones on land, very short. They didn't know how to build them long, and land was cheap.
Right.
So today there's a lot fewer of the columns, especially on land.
Right.
So the spans are much longer. So there'll be a lot less places to hide behind. And I think that in terms of the public realm, underneath the bridge will be more open and not as many columns. So
that would be good.
Yeah.
Great. I mean, if East Bank Trail could continue without any kind of impediment, and then it would be a more graceful way of getting from the bridge to the trail. And safe way, permanent way, because the elevator is always off. Yeah. That would be a great public benefit.
Thank you.
Yeah. Just one last comment. I mean, the last bridge lasted for 100 years and has been sort of a fond part of the architecture of Portland, so then how can this thing, this new bridge, do the same thing for the next 100 years, if indeed it is a new bridge, and becomes an iconic part of the city of Portland?
So I'll just leave you with a couple of messages from this urban design focus group. We only had one meeting, but some of the comments were things you remember. Randy Gregg's last words were, step up to the challenge. And then another comment was, this is truly the center of our region, not just the city. Burnside Street separates north and south, and the river separates east and west. And somebody said we should have a compass rose there out at the middle of the lift span that mark, you know, where the true center of our region is. So and another theme was, the west is the oldest part of town, and the east is, at this moment, feels like the newest part of town. So there's a lot of interesting things you can do with design to address some of those symbolic places. So, well, it's a fascinating project. We hope we are bringing a design to you in a few years that you'll be proud of.
An iconic design. Bridge City, you know, we have all these bridges. We're known as Bridge City. So how does the new one or the revised one play into that whole narrative of the city?
That's a good challenge.
I just want to say I love design review. This is so fun. I love hearing about all these projects. I'm very excited.
Awesome. Thank you.
Thank you.
So any other thoughts or comments? Thank you very much for coming in for a briefing today. We look forward to your return.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Yes. Art, can you have a wrap up? Sorry about that.
Not so much a wrap up as I was going to piggyback on something that you had mentioned earlier, and that was kind of talking about the guidelines. And Mike had mentioned that, you know, I came into this through my involvement through the Multnomah County Bike Ped Group, and so I was working on the draft evaluation criteria, and now I'm going through kind of a process as I guess in my capacity through BDS is reviewing the technical reports that, you know, that came out of that. And so one of the things that I think, because we're here today and we have the opportunity, is that those reports don't specifically list out the design criteria, which you were kind of, you know, alluding to, I think, earlier in kind of a broad sense.
Yeah.
So, and that's both like the land use and the visual resources. So I think that's an easy thing that the team can bring on board, but you're right. There are a lot of, established design criteria that would apply both for the historic, review and the design review. So,
yeah. And I imagine that when we find ourselves in the position of reviewing a new crossing of the Willamette River, that in this location it would be joint work with Landmarks.
I imagine it would. And actually, I think it was your comments at the meeting a year ago where you were a proponent, and actually Landmarks, you know, has echoed this as well about having, getting to a point where these meetings aren't maybe briefings to one and then another, but maybe mutual, kind of dual briefings. Because you're saying a lot of the same thing.
Yeah.
Commissioner Minor of Landmarks, kind of had a final comment with the Landmarks, briefing about guidelines and about the, she really kind of made a strong comment about the design, the pedestrian realm, and so on. So everybody's thinking the same thing, and it might be better captured if the presentation or the briefings were to both commissions at the same time.
Yeah, we will certainly do our best to be flexible on schedule.
It seems like that might be a real opportunity for this next spring as we bring in the array of guidelines and criteria that we have, since there's a multiple layering. I'm sure it'll all be schedule dependent, but we'll work with staff and see if that can work out.
Fantastic. Thank you very much. So we are going to take a very short break so that we can do a technology swap. When we return in about 10 minutes, it will be for a design advice request of Portland Proper Hotel. That is EA19-201292DA.
Please remind people to sign up.